Welcome to our midweek Bible study. If you would, open up to 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, and we'll begin in verse 9 here in a moment. If you can remember from our last study together, talking about the man of lawlessness or the son of destruction, and seeing how that played out even beyond what Paul was writing to them in 2 Thessalonians. And if you remember, even in verse 8, that it was told that the Lord would slay the man of lawlessness with the breath of his mouth and would bring to an end by the appearance of his coming. And not speaking of the second coming of Jesus, like the end of the earth, but a judgment that Jesus would bring. If you notice how it continues in verse 9, he says, that is, the one whose coming is in accord with the activity of Satan. That this man of lawlessness was going to work hand in hand with the way that Satan works in his activities. He says, with all power and signs and false wonders. Wonders that were trickery. They weren't genuine. They were false. Then verse 10, and with all the deception of wickedness for those who perish. Notice how wickedness has a deception. That seems to come through so often that whenever you see something that's wicked, there's always a deception that goes with it. Wickedness plays upon the thoughts of, it'll just be this one time, it'll only be a few times, or it's really not that bad to do these things. That's the deception of it. Really, to go after what the context is here, it really won't kill you spiritually. You can go after these things of the man of lawlessness who's rebellious toward God, rebellious toward the ways of God, and it'll still work out fine. That's the deception. How many times in our own lives, even setting apart from the context here, do we think, well, who would really know? Well, God will know. Who's really going to be affected other than just me? Other people will be affected, those that we encounter. The deceptions that go with wickedness are so vast. They come in so many different shapes, forms, and fashions that we look at them and realize, here's the true deception of wickedness. I won't perish. That rules for everybody but me. That's the true deception here. He says, all the deception of wickedness for those who perish. Because wickedness, unchecked and unrepented of or not turned away from, always brings about death. Here's what is so alleviating. Look at the rest of verse 10. He says, because they did not receive the love of the truth so as to be saved. The love of the truth will help you every day of your life because it will only lead us closer to Jesus. Jesus said of himself, I'm the way, the truth, and the life. Jesus is the truth. He played out. He's the one who was the acting side of what truth does, how truth reacts, where truth intercedes. And to go, how do you find the answer for the deception of wickedness? If we have the love of the truth, it will disarm every bit of wickedness. But when we don't really have that self-sacrificing, because this is the word agape, the agape of the truth, we sacrifice ourselves. Sometimes we learn the truth. We learn what Jesus says, how he acted, and we see it and we go, that has an effect on us. That's what will bring us through the death of Jesus. Having that undying, unfading love of the truth will only take us to the salvation that we find in Jesus. Even after we've come into Jesus. Take a thought back if you think through it. How many stories in the scriptures where people failed, did they ever have the love of the truth? If they would have had the love of the truth, it would have spared them. Think of the love of the truth. Maybe you think back in terms of man and woman in the Garden of Eden. If either one of them would have said, "We know what God told us and we love the truth," there would have never been a casting out of the garden. If they would have both held to, "We love the truth. We want to honor God. He said, don't partake of this, and we're not going to do it." If there would have been a sacrifice to say, "Sure, it does look good. It does look inviting. There's the deception of wickedness." But to go, "We love the truth more than we love ourselves and what we think and what we desire," then they would have been able to maintain that fellowship relationship with God in the garden. But because there wasn't the love of the truth, we start giving in to our own desires and our own lusts. If you remember in James chapter 1, verse 13, James writes about that God never tempts anyone. He can't even be tempted by evil. And he himself does not tempt anyone. When you see that, you understand, how come it's not tempting to him? How come evil doesn't tempt God? Because God is rallied around truth. Truth is what is going to stand. Notice verse 11 in 2 Thessalonians chapter 2. "For this reason," the reason being they didn't have a love of the truth, "for this reason God will send upon them a deluding influence so that they will believe what is false." There will be opportunities to forsake truth. There will be opportunities where the deception of wickedness can easily take us in. And it could easily take in those saints in Thessalonica as well. And that's really the context here. But let's make some application for us. He says, because they didn't receive the love of the truth so as to be saved, all of a sudden, there's this deluding influence. And other translations put it differently. King James Version says, a strong delusion. If you think through it, really the idea is there's a strong error. And with the word for influence, you get this idea of, boy, sometimes there's a strong pull to go in the wrong direction. Deluding is kind of like the error. It's the idea of a wandering or a forsaking of the right path. See, the right path is truth. But if that's not in place, we can get watered down and diluted in the way we see how we should respond to the words of Jesus. And we lose the love of the truth. And whenever that's gone, it won't be long before we lose our salvation. So in verse 11, it says, "For this reason," because there's not the love of the truth, he says, "God will send upon them a deluding influence so that they will believe what is false." It says God will send, and that's active. We know James chapter 1 says, look, God doesn't tempt, God himself does not tempt anyone. I want you to pull this into focus, because some people want to take this verse and say, see, God's the one who's at the heart of temptation. No, he is not. There's one thing you know for certain. He is not what's going on in temptation. If you think also through what's in James chapter 1, temptation comes with desires that are moving in the wrong direction. When desires are not rallied around truth, but instead rallied around the deception of wickedness, that's where it goes awry. Maybe you need another illustration here to see it clearly. Whenever God created the earth and all that it's contained, think back to the Garden of Eden. The tree of the knowledge of good and evil was in the garden. It was created. just like everything else that was there. And so here's God. There's the opportunity. If you have a love for the truth, you won't ever go there. You won't allow yourself to go. But man and woman, as we know of Adam and Eve, they looked at that fruit, specifically Eve, the woman. And she said, boy, it looks like it'll make you wise. Boy, it looks delicious. Notice what she's working off of, the deception of wickedness. We start to draw our own conclusions about what'll happen. If you remember, even the serpent, when he came up, he said, oh, you surely won't die. You won't perish. Yeah, you will. The moment we start to think that we can be wicked or sin, and it's not going to affect us in our spiritual lives, we're deceived. So in verse 11, he says, for this reason God will send upon them a deluding influence, a strong error. And sometimes people go by the herds. They get influenced by something in particular. Here in 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, the man of lawlessness, he was going to go after rebellion toward God, call himself God, display himself as being God, and there would be many who would follow him. They would follow the externals. They would follow the false wonders and the signs. And it would cost them eternally. It had such an influence over them that it diluted the truth to where it's not truth anymore, it's just false. He says, for this reason God will send upon them, those who do not have a love for the truth, a deluding influence, so that they will believe what is false. Not only will they go after what's false, they'll actually believe what's false. You can maybe think in your mind of so many teachings that you hear from time to time from denominations, from worldly people. Maybe the statements like, you know what? If you've been saved once, you're saved for eternity. There's nothing you can do to lose your salvation. A lot of people want to believe that. A lot of people want to think and delude themselves that I can do whatever I want now that I'm in Jesus. I'll be forgiven by the grace of God. We can fall from grace. Even Galatians writes about it. Oh, we can fall from it. And now we've perished. If you notice it again in verse 11, he says, for this reason God will send upon them a deluding influence so that they will believe what is false. If you think about 1 Corinthians 10:13, it talks about that no temptation has overtaken you but such is common to man. And yet God is faithful, who will not allow you to be tempted beyond what you are able, but will provide the way of escape so that you can endure. Jesus is always the escape. The love of the truth will always show us how to escape temptation, because we will not go head first into what is wrong and what is evil if there is a genuine love for the truth. There are times we make mistakes. There are times we sin. And when we do, it is not because we love the truth. It's because we love ourselves. We think that our thinking, our reasoning, makes more sense than God's. And that's part of the deception of wickedness. Maybe you take it a step further. Turn over to 1 John chapter 1. And think in terms of truth. 1 John chapter 1. And the idea in verse 5 is that God is light and in Him there is no darkness at all. Then look at verse 6. 1 John chapter 1 verse 6. If we say that we have fellowship with Him, with God, who is completely light and in Him there is no darkness at all. If we say that we share in common ground with Him, we have fellowship with Him, and yet walk in the darkness, we lie and do not practice the truth. We can claim, we can deceive ourselves into thinking we have a relationship with God, a fellowship with Him. And yet if we walk in the darkness, this is not the idea of we made a mistake, we moved back from it, we're going in the new direction of what is truthful. He says, if we walk in the darkness, in other words, we are living things we know are not right. He says, let's talk about the reality. We lie. We don't have fellowship with God. If He's light and we're walking in darkness, we don't share in common ground. We don't have fellowship together. We lie. Who are we lying to? We're lying to ourselves. We've become deceived. And when that happens, notice the tail end of verse 6. We do not practice the truth. We can't walk in the darkness and practice the truth. We can't walk with Jesus, claim to walk with Jesus, and do what's evil and wrong. If you notice verse 7, but if we walk in the light, as He Himself is in the light, we have fellowship with one another. We have fellowship with God when we walk in the light. And the blood of Jesus, His Son, cleanses us from all sin. And all the impurity gets removed. There's salvation. Verse 8. If we say that we have no sin, we are deceiving ourselves and the truth is not in us. Oh, we want to claim that we've already achieved perfection, that we're sinless and we never fail? He says, boy, we've really deceived ourselves now. And we don't have a relationship with the truth. Yet you notice, those who love the truth will walk in the light. And we'll use Jesus as our standard on how to walk. And we'll enjoy fellowship with God. We'll enjoy it with Him. And the blood of Jesus, His Son, cleanses us from all sin. How's that for being clean? Any mistakes we've made, cleared up and cleansed by the blood of Jesus, because we're striving to walk in the light as Jesus walked in the light. That is the fellowship with God. And that's where the love of the truth takes us. It takes us straight to the heart of Jesus. Skip down to 1 John chapter 2. Look at verse 3. By this we know that we have come to know Him, talking about Jesus, if we keep His commandments. That's how we realize we know Him, when we keep His commandments. It's not about doing what I want. It's about living out what He desires. Verse 4. The one who says, I have come to know Him and does not keep His commandments is a liar and the truth is not in him. Oh, we want to claim to know Jesus. We don't keep His commandments. If knowing Jesus doesn't lead us to keeping His commandments and His ways, then there's two things we know for sure. Number one, we're a liar. A liar. Because we don't know Him. And the truth is not in us. We don't have a relationship with truth. It's not just that we don't love it a little bit, it's that we don't have it at all. Because what the proof of us loving the truth is we'll keep His commandments and we will know Him. Verse 5, but whoever keeps His word, in him the love of God has truly been perfected. And that's where love grows within us. By this we know that we are in Him. The one who says he abides in Him ought himself to walk in the same manner as He walked, as Jesus walked. Come back to 2 Thessalonians chapter 2. So when you see that the love of the truth, the love of the commands of Jesus, the love to imitate Jesus, when that love of the truth is there, it leads us to salvation. It leads us even into the refining process. Because now we will sacrifice ourselves to go after what is true. However, there are times where there are things set in front of us that we could easily be tricked into thinking. And that would take us away from the truth. And we would even believe what's false. If you notice verse 12, 2 Thessalonians 2:12, in order that they all may be judged who did not believe the truth. He says, here's what is going to happen. There's a judgment that comes when we don't believe the truth, when we don't honor the commands of Jesus. If you remember back in the first chapter of 2 Thessalonians, where it was talking about the end of the world, talking about retribution coming out to those who do not know God. Those who do not know God can sometimes be those who claim to know Him. And yet they say they share in fellowship with God, but they don't honor His commands. They're just liars. And we have to be careful that that is not us. That we have not tricked ourselves into thinking that wickedness and evil is okay because this is just one situation here. It won't affect other people. It'll still cost us. Maybe we think no one else will find out. It'll still cost us. This is the one exception. It'll still cost us. And we need to know. Oh, here's the picture in 2 Thessalonians 2:12. He says, when you believe what's false, He says, in order that they all may be judged who did not believe the truth, but took pleasure in wickedness. What brings you the greatest pleasure? Really think about that. Is it things that are on the fringe of whether you know whether they're right or wrong? If we're not responding out of faith, it's not right. Sometimes we even take pleasure in wickedness. Maybe we take pleasure in rebellion. Maybe we take pleasure in slander or gossip. If you notice it, within the context in 2 Thessalonians 2, the idea was that people would go after a false god and would think it would be fine. And it will cost them their soul. Because they didn't love the truth. Be a lover of the truth. A love that even will sacrifice of yourself to go after what is right. Which means we're changing. And we're going after what's good. Never take pleasure in wickedness. And if we do, realize it'll cost us our soul. But if we love the truth, to love Jesus, here's where we find salvation. And being a lover of the truth is where we find escape from every temptation. Farewell, until we meet again.